from 90.7 WFAE. This is Newsworthy for Monday, January 12, 2026. I'm Eric Thiel. The Justice Department's investigation of Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell could complicate the path to confirmation for President Donald Trump's future nominees for the Fed Board of Governors, after Tom Tillis said Sunday that he'd oppose any Trump picks to replace Powell or other board members. Roll Call reports Tillis is a swing vote on the Banking Committee, which oversees the Fed and approves central bank nominees. The panel is currently split 13 to 11 between the majority Republicans and minority Democrats, meaning a single GOP defection could result in a deadlocked vote. In a statement Sunday, Tillis said he'll oppose the confirmation of any nominee for the Fed, including the upcoming Fed chair vacancy, until the legal matter is fully resolved. Powell's term as Fed chair is up in May, though he can stay on as a board member through early 2028. Outside the Beckler Museum of Art in Uptown Sunday, more than 200 Iranian Americans gathered to protest and stand in solidarity with Iranians demonstrating against the Islamic Republic in Iran. Mona Dugani has more.
About 200 people waved the Shida Khorshid, the Lion and Sun flag, Iran's former national flag. Protesters chanted and held signs reading, "Free Iran, Democracy for Iran, and Down with the Islamic Republic." This was the second protest of the year, organized by Shahram Mazhari, a professor at York Technical College. He says months of demonstrations in 2022 and 2023 following the killing of Mahsa Amini became a springboard for what is happening now.
Back then, the primary issue was women's rights issues. Now it's about job security, freedom, and freedom of expression and freedom of speech in Iran.
Mass demonstrations broke out in markets in downtown Tehran and have spread across the country. Amidst a total internet blackout, many people don't know how their families are doing or what is going on in Iran. For Manoush Askari, it was important to be at the protest to be a voice for the people in Iran.
This is a revolution.
Mona Dugani, WFAE News.
South Carolina health officials are reporting 99 new measles cases in the state, bringing the total number of cases statewide to 310. The outbreak has so far centered around Spartanburg County, with about 200 people there currently in quarantine. State epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell is warning that the true number of people exposed could be much higher. The South Carolina Department of Public Health has issued a statewide health alert, urging providers to watch for measles symptoms and quickly isolate suspected cases. The CDC recommends two doses of the MMR vaccine, which it says are about 97% effective at preventing measles. Mysterious booms have been rattling Union County residents over the last week, and local officials are trying to figure out what's causing them. Kenneth Lee has more.
The Union County Sheriff's Office is investigating reports of loud noises heard across the county that have caused alarm and shaken houses. The Sheriff's Office says in the last few days, residents have reported sounds of explosions, but no injuries or property damage has occurred. Despite canvassing numerous areas, they haven't found the source. If you heard something that sounds more specific than just a boom, have any clues or videos, contact the Sheriff's Office. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
The town of Matthews has been awarded a $17.4 million federal grant to improve safety and accessibility along John Street. It's one of the town's busiest downtown corridors. The town will focus on making the street safer for people walking, biking, riding transit, or driving. Matthews Mayor John Higdon calls it a major investment into the safety of downtown. Matthews will now work on fleshing out project details and a timeline. The Carolina Panthers spent yesterday cleaning out their lockers at Bank of America Stadium and looking toward a busy offseason. The season ended Saturday night in a playoff loss to the LA Rams 34-31. Panthers quarterback Bryce Young passed for 264 yards and a touchdown and ran for another in the loss.
We know we were right there. We know what it feels like, but you know, we know we're not entitled to anything next year. Again, it's just fuel for us. We have to make sure that that's the standard moving forward, making sure that we're only building and taking positive steps from there. That's going to take a lot of hard work and dedication through the offseason. But special thing about this group is, you know, we all look forward to that work, so I'm excited for it.
Young passed for 3,200 yards and 24 touchdowns this season, both career highs. Panthers offensive lineman Ikem Ekwonu had a patellar tendon rupture in his right knee during the game. The typical recovery time for that injury is 6 to 12 months. Others on the Panthers staff are cleaning out their desks. According to The Atlantic, Carolina Panthers owner David Tepper has fired multiple executives, including Chief Venues Officer Caroline Wright, General Counsel Tanya Taylor, VP of Tech Rob Bence, and VP of Ticket Sales Mike Brown. Both Wright and Taylor joined the Panthers in 2023. With so many people taking a break for the New Year's holiday, we saved our First Friday Arts segment for the second Friday of the month. It's our look ahead at what's happening in Charlotte arts and culture. This week, Lawrence Totman, arts contributor to the Charlotte Ledger, Ruby Britt Height, WFAE's Director of Community Engagement, and Pat Moran, reporter for Queen City Nerve, spoke with our Nick Della Canal.
Larry, I want to start with you. You've brought a strong slate of museum shows this month. I'm wondering if we could start with an exhibit at the Beckler that you're looking at.
Well, I went to see Assembly Lines, Modernism and Machines, which runs through February 2nd, and it depicts interactions between artists and technology in beautiful ways, frightening ways, if you're my age, in my 70s, disturbing ways, because it suggests that in the end, making art may be something that doesn't really require artists. There are machines that learn your gestures, learn your thought patterns, and then begin to create art that you've started on their own. So interesting prospect there, perhaps a bit disturbing.
Yeah, certainly.
I saw two more warm-hearted exhibits, I'll say, at the Gantt Center, both of which I really liked. One is Jazz Greats, Classic Photographs from the Bank of America collection, which is what it says, amazing art of musicians, crowds, dancers, taken over the last 100 years. Strong North Carolina connections and South Carolina. Dizzy Gillespie's in a lot of them. He's from Shiraw. Yeah. Great picture of John Coltrane, who of course is from Hamlet. And Mary Lou Williams, who was a pianist, also taught at Duke University, so strong there. And they play a great jazz soundtrack while you're watching. If you listen to My Favorite Things by John Coltrane, you're there for all 10 minutes because no one can walk away from the train.
Yeah. And then there's also a big Mint Museum Uptown exhibition that I think you're about to see not long after we wrap up this conversation.
That is correct. I'll be going this afternoon to Renaissance, Romanticism, and Rebellion, European art from the Smith-Naifa collection. That's a long title, but what it means is 70 paintings, sculptures, and works on paper from the Renaissance, the Romantic era of the 19th century, and rebellion refers to modernism and avant-garde art, although it's a rebellion that now took place decades ago. It still looks like a rebellion. So I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. Well, Ruby, let's turn to you. Your picks this month seem to focus on connecting art with community conversation. So let's start with the MLK Day event.
Sure. So the Levine Museum of the New South is featuring at the Carolina Theater the film Selma. Of course, that celebrates Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, and it's a special screening and community discussion about the Selma event. It's an award-winning film that powerfully, you know, chronicles the 1965 Selma to Montgomery March that was led by Dr. King. And so the opening on Thursday, January 15th, 6 p.m., begins with a brief opening reception and then offering space for reflection and connection and community before the film. So it's Ticketmaster tickets. People are always excited to go to a Levine Museum of the New South event because you always learn something and you grow out of the experience. And another exhibition that is at the Gantt Center is called The Pursuit of Home. And this is with a renowned artist, Mario Moore, about the growing challenges Americans face in home ownership, including student debt and stagnant wages and housing market. And he basically takes that into paintings and drawings and sculpture. And so I think that's an interest that maybe Pat has something to share about.
Yeah, because Pat, I believe you also wanted to highlight that exhibit. So anything you wanted to add?
Yes, thank you, Ruby. So I spoke with Mario Moore for the it's the cover story for the current issue of Queen City Nerve, shameless plug. And it is, to your point, Ruby, how housing is getting out of reach for people. There's one painting in the exhibit, and it's called Mortgage Burning. And what it is three women three Black women. We don't know who they are because their heads are cut off. They're framed out of the painting, and they're burning a mortgage. And that was a ceremony that Mario says was once common in Black communities, that once you paid off your mortgage, a group of folks would get together and then you'd burn the mortgage. And it almost seems, again, in Mario's words, almost fantastical, almost fantasy. Mm-hmm. The work touches on our inability to own a home, and it basically is not even reality for at least a couple of generations for Black people. But now we see that it is sort of spreading and then that this has become culture-wide. The paintings themselves, they're astonishing. They're like, they're lush, they're detailed. There's a mythic quality to the paintings, which I think is fitting because home ownership is becoming a myth.
Yeah, that sounds very thought-provoking. You also wanted to highlight the world premiere, I believe, of The Changemaker at the Carolina Theater. Now, I understand this is a documentary focused on a Latino baker in Charlotte who's really been at the forefront of protesting the recent immigration crackdown.
Yeah, that's the... you've met Manolo, correct?
I've interviewed him a few times, yeah.
Yeah. Same here. And, you know, he's a fascinating person.
And this is Manolo Bentecor for people. Yeah.
Yeah. So Manolo is an immigrant. He fled a brutal civil war in Colombia, came here, $100 in his pocket, and I think two shirts. So he's opened the bakery, fantastic bakery, but he's also been kind of like a rallying figure. And I think we really saw that after Operation Charlotte's Web. I've covered protests before that were planned. This seemed mostly spontaneous. It was East Charlotte rose up. And there's no accident, I think, it starts at the bakery. Should say that there's also other things at that event. Ultima Nota, a rock and Espanol band by Charlotte's Tony Ariza, a Venezuelan immigrant. And then there's a post-film discussion with Manolo and the director, Courtney Dixon.
Okay. And then very quickly, there's also a stacked lineup at the Milestone. So if someone is looking for something maybe a little louder and later, what should they expect?
Definitely louder. So this is Saturday, January 18th at the Milestone. The bands are I Hate Dave, Once Below Joy, The Groove Skeletons, General Purpose. I Hate Dave, my paper honored them as best rock band and our best in the nest. They're really stylistically rangy. They have a dynamite front woman named Ariel Fisher. There's some songs that just stand out. There's one called 555. It's really buzzy and bass heavy. Once Below Joy are like progressive rock meets psych rock. Charlotte's Groove Skeletons are, as you would expect, very groovy. Also filling out the bill from Greensboro, General Purpose. So it's like, if you don't like one band, stick around for the next, because it's all over the map stylistically.
Yeah, a whole buffet of sound. Okay, well, that is Lawrence Topman from the Charlotte Ledger, Ruby Britt Height from WFAE, and Pat Moran with the Queen City Nerve. We'll post a list of everything we talked about today at WFAE.org. Thanks to all three of you, and I'll see you guys out there.
Okay, sounds great.
Thank you, Nick.
See ya.
And for Monday, January 12th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.